In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Donate on Patreon.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by Elf Fake It All, Barry Blake.
What's up?
Hey man, how's it going?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Good week. I got to go home a little bit early yesterday because I've done a couple of late ones in the office for things that have not gone ahead as planned.
No.
Not going to name names. But you might have seen their name on Twitter. Anyway, but I've had a couple of late nights. I was even late for D&D the other night.
Unbelievable.
I know. What a great session it was, though.
And
So in the end, I got to go home slightly early. I thought to myself, I was like, this is great. I'm going to go home. I'm going to play some Resident Evil 2 because I had a great stretch of it on Sunday because my wife was doing some writing in the office. So I was like, brilliant. I had like a good 2 hour stretch on Resident Evil, made some really good progress, really enjoying myself. Did all the stuff with like the Mr. X and all this stuff. I was really, really enjoying it. So that was my plan. I was going to go home. I was going to play some more Resident Evil 2. What happened was I got home, felt kind of like, you know, I was a bit sleepy. I was a bit tired.
Nappy
so,
time.
So I was like, I'm going to quickly watch something. I'll watch an episode of something on Netflix and then I'll crack on with Resident Evil 2. I fell asleep. I sat on the sofa. I put my legs up and I just fell asleep. And I napped for a good couple of hours.
Oh, God.
And then I woke up and I...
Netflix is like... You still watching RuPaul?
Are you there?
Are you still watching RuPaul's Drag Race?
And so I was like, oh. And then I looked at the time and I was like, well, now I've got to tidy up the house and make dinner for when my wife's home from work. Well, no more Resident Evil for me then. So that was a bit of a bummer. So I'm kind of hoping that we finish at a decent time today in the office so I might be able to get like half an hour in before my wife gets home.
Yeah, see, tonight my plan is... So, game I've got back into recently, for a couple of years ago, Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Okay.
Liberate Bolivia from the people who live in Bolivia, the game. It's really fun. Like, I had to, I realized when I turned it back on, so me and my housemate have started playing it, two-player, so like... It's quite good, but it's actually more difficult to play two-player because normally you get a three-person squad with you when you play single-player, and you can like mark targets. So as you're taking down the drug cartel, basically you're an American operator who goes into Bolivia to take down the drug cartel who have taken over the whole of Bolivia, essentially, in this game. But normally you've got a three-person squad with you, and you can mark targets. So like when you recon a place with a drone or binoculars or whatever, you go, this guy, this guy, this guy. And then you can sync shot. So then you would like, you line up your shot. And when you fire, they fire. So you take down like four guys at once in this beautiful orchestrated ballad of bullets and death and stealth. Not so much when you play it just two player and you're marking people and going like, there's a guy by the front of the plane. I'll shoot the guy at the back. Okay, 3, 2, 1. I missed. It's all kicking off. Run? Run? I don't know. And that happens 90% of the time that we're playing at the moment. It's very good and very fun and is one of the biggest open worlds I think I've seen. It's like, it's when you go up in the helicopter and stuff in this game, it looks incredible. But it is also some of the worst storytelling in a game I think I've ever encountered. To the point where when I turned it back on, I realized that the last time I was playing it, I had muted everything. I had muted my squad because they just say stuff like bumholes. Like when something goes wrong, they're like, oh no. Well, like worse. So they go like, S balls is their like phrase. But like all the time you bump into something like S balls.
Okay. That gets old.
They just chat constantly about stuff. But then all the stories also like Americans coming in and liberating Bolivia from people. I just find it all a bit grating. So I was like, mute all of that.
Yeah.
I am just playing this game purely from a gameplay standpoint now of terrible sneaking, essentially, and then very quick thinking on your feet, attempting to clear out everything by shooting people.
I finished Phoenix Wright 2, Justice for All. Finished that on the tube this morning, so that was good. And I started playing the third one.
They're good tube games, Phoenix Wright.
Right, yeah. And I noticed that as well, because a lot of people tend to watch my iPad while I'm playing them, like over my shoulder. So I've now started playing Trials and Tribulations, which is the third one. It's the one I've played the least. Mm. So I'm looking forward to going through that again.
I think I've played all the Phoenix Wright games up until at least Apollo Justice, and then I played the 3DS one when that came out. Long games.
Long games, yeah. Mm. And we were talking about this earlier. Like there are four cases per game, and the first one is your training mission.
Mm.
But it is a long, long game.
Yeah.
Because the trials go on for ages, and you've got to do so much in them. And there's a lot of dialogue in the game, because it's all dialogue.
Yeah. So, yeah. I wish it was a bit more like...
It's like an interactive book.
I would love to play a Phoenix Wright game that was actually just the courtroom scenes, and like it was just back-to-back cases, and you just had the evidence sort of like... You did a bit of the... You were sort of given the brief rather than doing all the investigation stuff, because I find that bit the most laborious of it.
Mm-hmm.
Going around individually talking to people in a town, trying to find what screen everyone is on.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're looking for evidence, and it involves clicking everything until you're like... All the assets look the same. Something will eventually move, I guess. Tap, tap, tap.
If there was one thing I would change about the Phoenix Wright games, particularly the older ones anyway, is that I wish they wouldn't do like an opening prologue where it shows you who the real killer is.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather work that out for myself.
Like, yeah, you are ruining the mystery of the game.
Like, I know it's obvious like who the killer is regardless, but I would like to learn that. I would like to learn that myself, as opposed to being like, this person is the killer.
All you got to do is prove it. You already know. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So good time with that, though. Let's have this quick Rusev hey before we get into the NXT review.
Rusev.
This comes in from, I'm going to say Sif or CF. I do apologize, my friend. You're from Egypt, but I don't. I'm going to guess CF. It's S-E-I-F. Sif?
Sif
could be.
Is it Sifa from Final Fantasy VIII?
I do apologize. Anyway, he writes, Dear Mr. Owen, Mr. Davis, Mr. Blake, and certainly not Mr. Datsun, I've been meaning to send this Rusev hate for a long time, but never got round to it. I'm currently watching Raw, and it's given me a question to ask you, so I'll put them together. May not get to the question, my friend. If you want a question asked, got to become a pledgehammer. That's how it works. Recently, I went to my first ever live wrestling show when I was on holiday in Birmingham. Brackets, I live in Egypt, which was Fight Forever Phenomena. We went to the Fight Forever show, the one in London.
We did.
Deep red, it was very good. As someone who was mainly a WWE fan, I knew most of the people on the card, but wasn't that invested in most of them. Being there live really changed my view on independent wrestling, and I aimed to go to more shows. Anyway, the day after the show, I was buying some groceries from Tesco when the friend I was was traveling with and saw who I thought was Jimmy Havoc. I didn't think of it too much, so we continued shopping normally. When checking out, I saw him close up and realized that it definitely was him.
Was he just buying plaster?
Or he's buying knives.
Yeah, that was it.
Buying things that you can smash.
It depends on if it's the day before or after a show.
Yeah, yeah. We paid for our shopping and waited for him outside. We shook hands with him and told him how much he brought us over to the show the night before. He said he was really happy that he could buy us over, and that's what keeps him going, and it's really rewarding for him. We took pics with him. My friend has them, and I was sure to get them and send them soon, and went on our way. Turns out that his hotel was in the same direction, so we walked together for about 5 minutes. We talked general wrestling, and he said how happy he was with Cody coming over and bringing eyes to the UK products and how they were becoming good friends. Guess that I should have seen that as a spoiler that he was signing for AEW, but I never made the connection. Jimmy was honestly the kindest person I've ever met and the most down-to-earth famous person ever. I've now got tickets for Double or Nothing and hope he gets booked on the card. I'd imagine he was. And lucky you for getting tickets to Double or Nothing. That's not easy. So that's the reset part of my email. He's got a question, but... Got to become a pledgehammer if you want questions on the podcast. That's how it works, mate.
Just stories.
Exactly. We want stories. We want correspondence. So thank you so much for that email, my friend. But we're going to crack on with the NXT review now. Talking about, it was only a bloody title change. Here's the show. Yeah, there was a title change on NXT last night. Although, it was a title change that some people say we might have spoiled in the news.
Oh, no!
So the story,
or did we?
Or did we?
We did. Accidentally.
Yes, sort of.
They filmed two, so it wasn't a spoiler. Yeah. It was a potential... Two things are happening. The same two things that would have been happening if the match was just happening anyway. Not a spoiler.
So... here's what happened. A couple of weeks ago at the tapings, Velveteen Dream won the NXT North American Championship from Johnny Gargano. However, they also taped another ending to the match where Gargano came back down, the match was restarted, and Gargano retained. So it was actually, I'll be honest, a smart way of doing this because they know that word's going to get out. Because as soon as, like, as the tapings are happening, these things are getting out.
People are tweeting, like, scoop one.
Scoop one, which I'll be honest, is not a scoop.
No.
Like, that's not how scoops work.
No, scoops is like no one else saw it. But, like, crowd of people were there with you.
You're in a room of 500 people.
Most people saw it.
The same thing. That's not a scoop, mate.
Scoop.
Scoop of stars. So... That's what happened on NXT. So we reported that in the news, this, that, and the other. And then they announced that Velveteen Dream won the World Collide tournament over WrestleMania weekend, and he challenged Johnny Gargano. That was 2 weeks ago. Now here we are. Here's the match. And it turns out they went with the ending where Velveteen Dream wins.
And keeps it.
And keeps it, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. We're not going to go into the spoilers for the next set of tapings, which I don't usually read. But because of what happened on Raw and SmackDown this week, I was so intrigued to see how were they going to fix this.
Yeah.
And it turns out they didn't try.
No, it was...
They just ignored it.
It was one of those things where it's like when you Wikipedia a crime film because you don't understand what happened. And then you're like, I just have to have this explained to me in more simple terms.
Ollie Davis, why
I had to read the spoilers to be like, I just need to understand...
Ollie Davis did this with 13 Reasons Why, that Netflix series.
Yeah.
He watched the first episode, didn't like it, but did want to know what was going to happen. So he went to Wikipedia and just read what happened.
Oh my God.
Just fair enough, I guess.
So, some people don't like surprises.
Well, that's it. But then there are
not people, wrestling fans, though. They love surprises.
Love surprises, and which I think is a perfectly fine thing. I love surprises too. And this was a very surprising week of wrestling. So we're not going to go into the spoilers here, but like aside from one element of the storyline going forward, them being a babyface tag team, Gargano and Ciampa, I mean, is not something we're really moving forward with, at least not in NXT.
No.
So I think from now on, we need to treat this NXT review like WWE treat NXT.
It exists
in a completely separate space. We shouldn't be talking about Black on the main roster or Ricochet on the main roster because I don't think any of that matters to NXT. They are completely... This is Elseworld stuff. This is like a Batman title alongside a different Batman title that are coming out on the same week.
It definitely depends. Yeah, it's
with
one of those
different
things,
continuity.
Though, obviously, we then had we had promo packages this episode, though, that were like, well, these guys were on Raw and SmackDown. So it depends, really, coming out of these tapings. Because the thing, obviously, we don't know from the tapings, even having seen spoilers, is how much Mauro Ranallo goes on about them being on Raw and SmackDown, how much they've shoehorned in to the commentary or to the post-production side of things, if these guys are going to continue to appear on Raw and SmackDown every week. Are they going to bring it up every week on NXT?
Yeah, because NXT is like a big pre-taped thing, and Raw and SmackDown are rewritten like an hour before the show airs, it is going to be...
we don't know what we're doing!
It's going to be very much impossible for NXT to predict what's going to be happening on Raw and SmackDown in the lead-up to WrestleMania.
I would just leave 10 minutes of blank airtime that you can just fill with packages and just hope that you can cover...
That's it. You just got to paint
over the cracks.
That's exactly what you're going to do. So the story... that's being reported is that Black, Ricochet, Gargano and Ciampa are going to be across all three shows. And we know that from the spoilers because Black and Ricochet were there. I'm not going to say what they were doing, but they were there. So those four lads are going to be cross-promotional things. Brand split's not ending, though. They're going to be cross-promotional things. The NXT tag team titles are being defended. Or the WWE women's tag team titles are being defended across all three brands, but the brand split's not ending.
No.
It's still a thing. And that's just what they're telling
Team
Fox.
Raw and SmackDown are just getting smaller, that's all.
And it's going to be more confusing come Survivor Series. Are you Team SmackDown?
Or do you go both ways?
Could be. So they're going to be across all three shows. Mm-hmm. But let's just focus on NXT. And let's talk about what was a corking little main event of this show.
Right.
So it was Johnny Gargano versus Velveteen Dream for the North American Championship. And it went about 20-odd minutes.
It
was a long one. And it was really, really great. You had Gargano really playing up to his kind of like heel persona that he sort of is, this cocky heel thing. And there was a point during this where the crowd had dueling chants, but they were dueling chants that were both for Velveteen Dream. Because they were trying to go, Velveteen, Johnny Jackass, Velveteen. So it was kind of both of them. And there were chants of Johnny Jackass through the crowd. And Gargano was really playing up to it. I thought Gargano was awesome in this match. Mm. But as good as Gargano was, holy heckins, was Dream great.
Dream is amazing.
He's so good.
He's one of those people though where it's like everyone says he's quite green, he's quite new to it.
But he's 22 or whatever.
But he's obviously taken to it very well. And actually, you put him in the ring with somebody like Johnny Gargano who gets great matches out of everyone. And Dream is the perfect foil to that. He just seems to be able to absorb that energy off whoever he's in the ring with and be like, and now you have great match.
It's incredible, really, because Johnny Gargano is Johnny Takeover. He's mm-hmm. the guy that you put onto a Takeover card because you're guaranteed to get like a 4.5-star match out of him, regardless who he's in the ring with. And you couple that with the Velveteen Dream, whose job has been to like make stars in NXT by being losing to them.
Yes.
Like that was his gimmick for a little while. It was like he would have Takeover matches where he would put someone over and they would come out looking even better because he put them over, despite the fact that he's also getting over at the same time. Mm-hmm. He's a lovely, lovely character and a brilliant, brilliant presentation of him. He is one of those NXT stars that they've just done so, so well. Mm. And then you couple these two together on an NXT show, even though the match went 20 minutes or, you could say only went 20 minutes and it wasn't like, say, a Takeover quality match. This was an excellent TV match.
It was brilliant.
But it was brilliant. It was so, so good. And even as someone who knew what the finish was, I was so invested towards the end. Like popping up out of my seat, I was popping for the near falls.
Yes.
I loved this match.
I think they're just incredibly inventive guys. That whole like final stretch with the Dream Valley Driver teasing and then the Avalanche Dream Valley Driver getting teased and he drops down, he kicks his legs out, he does the rolling flatliner thing. They were pulling out all this stuff. You were just like, this is mad that you thought of this.
Yeah.
This is crazy. And then that final moment where he rolls him through a couple of times and does the Dream Valley Driver and then hits the Rainmaker. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God,
it was great. What a stretch.
Yeah, it was great. That Avalanche Dream Valley Driver might be my favourite spot of the match. Because they teased it earlier in the match.
Yes.
But then they sort of didn't deliver on it. And then they went up to do it, to tease it a second time. In my head, I'm like, okay, cool. So Gargano gets out of this one and then they'll do it a third time. And that's when you get the big pop of it. Like I'm thinking Keith Lee, Ishii, teasing of the suplex. And when Gargano fights out of it, I'm like, I was like, oh, God, Gargano gets out. But then Dream just powers up again and lifts him up and hits it. And I was like, whoa, he hit it. And I popped out of my seat so big for it. I thought, as you say, like the final stretch of this match was absolutely wonderful. Mm. Wonderful, wonderful television.
But I think it was a very well-worked 20-minute match in the first place. Anyway, they did brilliantly to just play like, they played on the idea that Johnny thinks he's the better wrestler than anyone on NXT. So they went very technical to begin with, and Dream kept up. And then Johnny starts to accelerate what he's doing, and that's when Johnny kind of gets into control. And then he actually works him over for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then when Dream mounts this comeback for the sort of final 10-minute stretch, it's unbelievable.
It was great.
It was perfect. It was so perfectly paced.
Yes, and one of the other wonders of NXT that I really, really, really appreciate about them as a brand, it's that multi-level storytelling as well. Because not only did you have the storytelling that was going on in this match and putting over the fact that Velveteen Dream is now the North American champion and he's going to be going into his own feuds going forward, looking to have a very, very good feud coming out of the TV tapings by the looks of things. But it was also furthering the Gargano-Ciampa storyline.
Yes.
And I'm just going to ignore Raw and SmackDown where they tagged as baby faces.
They're best friends.
No, it doesn't. No, they didn't. They never did that.
They are best friends.
That makes zero sense.
Just two best friends.
Because they had this backstage segment before the match.
Yes.
Where Gargano said to him, he was like working out backstage and Candice LeRae walks up and he's like, hey, Candice, this is great. I'm ready for my match. And then Ciampa's like in the background skulking holding the title. And Gargano is just like, look, I won this belt on my own. I don't need you. I've never needed you. I hate you. We're not a team. And this, that, and the other. And he's like, I've got everything I need right here to, you know, Candice LeRae. And he's like, I'm going to be Johnny freaking wrestling. But then throughout the match, you've got Ciampa up like in the rafters.
Pretending
like
doing his Sting impression, yeah.
Just watching from the shadows, watching in darkness, clutching in his title.
You couldn't see the zip line he built.
Watching Johnny Wrestling lose the North American Championship. Mm-hmm. And it just, but it furthers this storyline that Johnny was wrong. He does need Ciampa. Or does he need Ciampa? Is this what Johnny's going to realize? That he does need Ciampa in order to further his career. Because that's the whole thing, is when DIY split up, Johnny was like, I never needed Ciampa anyway. I'm going to go out as a single star.
Yep.
And all he did was fail.
Yes.
He kept losing all the time. Mm-hmm. He kept failing at winning the NXT Championship. And who won the NXT Championship on their first try? Tommaso bloody Ciampa. And
Captain Wright.
Exactly. So Gargano was then like, no, I need to get rid of you. I need to win the NXT Championship and do it for the right thing. And that didn't work either. So then when he went for a different belt, he used Ciampa-style tactics to win. So it's telling the story of, does he need Ciampa?
Yes.
It's just brilliant, brilliant multi-level storytelling that's been going on for 3-4 years or whatever it is. Like, I think they first started tagging in like 2015, maybe 2016 when they first came into NXT. So this is such like brilliant long-term storytelling that's going to get this big payoff that we assume at the next TakeOver event, which I believe now we can call TakeOver New York.
Yes.
Because despite the fact it's not in New York, it's at the Barclays Center, I suppose, which is in Brooklyn. It's NXT TakeOver New York.
Mm-hmm.
So we can now, at least we can give it an official title.
So, this storytelling like goes further than that, because it's the same. We're seeing reflections of the same aspect of Johnny's character leading to his downfall again. In this match, the reason Dream starts to get into Johnny's head and starts to gain control is because Dream slaps Johnny.
Yeah.
And Johnny switches from being Johnny Wrestling to Johnny, I'm quite cross now.
Johnny
and
Badass.
And that's when he stops being capable of actually wrestling the match properly. Because actually, in the Ricochet match, yeah, he went quite far using Ciampa tactics. But in this match, he was using Johnny tactics from when he was facing Ciampa.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, I'm going to push your stretcher back down the ramp and restart the match. I lost. I'm going to try and knee your face off. Oh, no, I've hurt my knee.
Yeah.
This was that sort of level of stuff where he, you know, Dream slaps him and Johnny switches from this style that was working, which was working over his limbs, doing a lot of technical wrestling, to suddenly like, I'm going to be hyper-aggressive. And that gives Dream the in.
And I love the slap as well, because they did the slap at the start.
Mm.
And they put this over brilliantly on commentary. That was the slap that instigated the brawl after TakeOver Phoenix.
Yes.
And it's Johnny like losing himself and becoming a hothead. The same character that AJ Styles is. I've been told. Commentary, never seen it in the ring. But I just think there was so many wonderful levels to this match.
Mm.
I thought they did a terrific, terrific job of this. I'm very happy for the Velveteen Dream as well, getting the North American Championship. He is a character that sort of like, he did need to win a belt at some point to kind of legitimize him, because he can't just keep going for belts and losing.
No.
So I think he did need to get like a big win under his belt. And I think using the Worlds Collide tournament to get to that point was a really smart way of doing it.
Yes.
And so then he can go into a takeover as a defending champion. I think that's a really, it's good that the Dream got that.
Yeah, because he'd defied the odds before. He'd been defying the odds of like what normal wrestling parlance is. It's like you watch people lose over and over again and eventually you go like, oh, they'll never win, I don't care.
Yeah.
And Dream somehow defied that, because every time he came out, you're like, oh, the Dream's here. Yeah, amazing.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
I'm about to get an experience.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see someone actually like have worked very hard, put a lot of other people over, and now get the chance with someone who actually is, you know, we were saying that Dream is the kingmaker in NXT. Gargano's the slightly whatever's above a kingmaker.
Yeah.
He probably is that guy, because he goes, do you know what? Dave Meltzer's paying attention. Like, yeah. that's kind of his vibe. So it's nice to see Dream get put over in a match with Johnny.
Yeah.
Because they are both the two sort of masterclass people for matches that make other people look good.
And he won it clean as well. Yeah, there was no shenanigans. There was no Ciampa interference. There was no nothing. He won that clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring, which does wonders for Velveteen Dream in terms of being in the ring with Gargano and beating him.
And doesn't hurt Gargano
absolutely
either.
Absolutely not, because it's part of the story.
Yeah, because it plays into something else that's going on.
It's part of his character. Yeah. I think it was great.
He's not just a loser.
No, exactly.
He lost.
I thought this was a really, really great finish to what was a really good episode of NXT.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I had a wonderful time with this. Dipped a little bit in the middle, but we'll come on to that. But I thought this was a really, really good episode.
You can see why they went, well, we'll get these NXT guys on Raw and SmackDown. They would,
well, yeah, I mean, because that...
Watching week-to-week NXT, they were like, oh, we could just have them and then it'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so we're going to go into this a bit more on the magazine show on Saturday, which Ollie and I will be doing. But yeah, the story is that Vince McMahon, that is, panicked. And decided that Raw, all the main roster stars were stale and they were never going to be superstars. And so he panicked and just said, bring me your four best from NXT. And that's why it's Gargano, Ciampa, Ricochet and Black.
They decided I'll take four of your finest.
Exactly, yeah. I'd imagine you would have thought that Riddle would have been a part of that as well. But Riddle's comments in that interview that he did last week where he called the main roster childlike probably did him no favours.
Well, I mean, but also at this point in time, it's probably no favours either to just immediately go up there.
Well, yeah, I was reading... So
he's probably like, he's just relocated his entire life as well. Like, he probably just like, I'll probably do a year here at least before I have to move house again.
The story is that there are, the quote was from two NXT stars, two top NXT stars who did not want to go to the main roster. And they had said, I'm terrified of going to the main roster because here I've got creative freedom and I can do a lot more. Yeah, I'll get a bigger pay packet, but I want to stay in NXT for as long as possible. Mm. But conversely, there are other guys in NXT that are desperate to go to the main roster because they know that they are Vince's kind of wrestlers.
Yes.
And so they're like, I'm not going to get a push here, but if I go to the main roster, I will get a push because I'm a big jacked dude, I guess.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So we got a hype package for Gargano and Dream for the North American Championship to start off this show. But, excuse me, we kicked off.
What was that?
I've got a bit of a frog in my throat for a second. But we kicked off in style.
You're speaking tongues.
We kick off in style for this show with Aleister Black versus Roderick Strong.
Well...
I've still got sort of the lumber.
They've gone up to the main roster, you see.
Nope. That's out of continuity.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. No.
Not in this NXT world.
I keep forgetting that the universe doesn't exist.
Exactly. This is a different title. Mm. This is like, I don't know, I won't go do another comics comparison. But so yeah, this was Aleister Black versus Roderick Strong. And it was kind of weird as well. Not weird, but they've been telling this story over the last couple of weeks that Undisputed Era have not had a great 2019.
No.
And Roddy loses this match as well, and they were putting over on commentary. Bad year for it. Like, the losses. What was Ronaldo's line? Ronaldo's line was, the losses are continuing to mount for the Undisputed Era.
Piling them up.
That's a really cool storyline for them, of this tag team, or this group, this faction that have been so dominant for like the last year or so, winning titles, winning the NXT Tag Team Championships, getting new members, you know, having an injury but still winning all of these awards and accolades and stuff. But now they've lost a load of matches. And what are they going to do to respond to that? Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think it works for their characters as well, because I think they've got so used to cheating to win, or like playing the odds in their favor and all this stuff, and that's not even working anymore now. That you know, they're failing at run-ins, they're failing at post-match beatdowns, right, generally speaking. So it's very interesting to see where this goes. Could this eventually sort of end in a very subtle face turn for the team, where they become a bit more of a sort of, you know, much more of a tweener group, and they're just kind of cool with it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally.
Actually, quite like playing by the rules.
Yeah,
because do you know what? Like some of the major successes that they've had have been when they've been playing by the rules. Like, they won. Cole defended the North American Championship a couple of times, where it was just a very straight match, and it was brilliant.
He won the match without cheating. He won the ladder match.
He won the ladder match without cheating. He's defended the title a few times with no help from any of the rest of the Undisputed Era. Same goes for the tag team.
Yep.
You know, when whatever combination of Fish and O'Reilly or O'Reilly and Strong, they won plenty of matches without actually, with just good psychology, a little bit shifty moves, but not really like actually breaking any of the rules.
Yeah, no,
so
I agree.
They are a very capable team. It would be interesting to see if they are pushed in a direction now where they just go, we just got to sort of knuckle down and do this properly. Like,
exactly, because
no more shortcuts.
Because they were announced, Undisputed Era of Red Dragon, so O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. They were announced for the Dusty Rhodes Classic, which will be starting in the next few weeks. Well, actually, I think it starts next week. Mm-hmm. So they've announced four teams. There's another four teams to be announced. I at first thought it was just a four-team tournament.
a very quick tournament.
And I was like, well, that's a shame. But then they said, yeah, there's another four-team
tournament. Unless they do a
round robin. Yeah, totally. So it'll be interesting to see then where Undisputed Era go and where their characters go from being within this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really enjoying what they're doing with the Undisputed Era at the moment. And I thoroughly enjoyed this match. This was just great, great wrestling.
Mm.
Roderick Strong is awesome.
I would not like to have a wrestling match against Roderick Strong.
I fear for my back. I've got a bad back as it is. Having said that, maybe he'd help my bad back. Like, maybe, he'd have to, like,
maybe it's like
it
visiting
the
chiropractor.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You come out of it like, oh, I'm actually quite limber now.
Brilliant. This is lovely. It's like DDP yoga, but like for a match.
It's like a really long-winded massage.
But there were some really, really great spots in this. Like, I loved Roderick Strong doing like that torture rack bomb into the post while he was standing on the apron.
The backbreaker onto the steps, the steel steps.
Yeah.
There were so many bits of that where I was just like, oh, no, please. Ooh. Like, I think the torture rack one onto the turnbuckle actually made me get out of bed and go like, oh no!
And actually, I think as well, like Aleister Black got the win out of nowhere with the Black Mass, but I thought this actually really did a good job in putting Roderick Strong over Strong, if you'll excuse the terrible wording.
Roderick over his name.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so Roddy didn't look bad in defeat here.
No.
I thought he actually, it's one of the better showings that Roddy has had as a singles guy, particularly now that they're telling this story that O'Reilly and Fish are going back to being the tag team, and Roddy's going to be the single star, another single star. So I think this was actually a really smart way to make Roddy look good in a singles match, even though he lost.
Yep.
I thought it was a success on every level.
Well, they do very well to make the Black Mass is a protected finisher, right? Like, it is, and it's gone. He's gone up to the main roster this week. I know it's separate continuity, but he's gone up. We did mention that he's won twice this week. He has defeated everyone with the Black Mass from out of nowhere, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So getting caught with it, not really that devastating to your sort of
your credibility,
because people just go, okay, well, you know, you can't really, if you get kicked in the head like that, you go down. That's just the way it is. And it was literally Black slips out of something, twists around, hits the kick.
Yeah.
Like, Roddy was in control prior to that. It did feel like Roddy's match to win almost.
Yeah, really
towards the end. And then Black is very good at kicking you in the face.
But, like, compare that again, different continuity, but compare that to the Elias match on Raw, where Elias just dominated 90% of it and then Black hit out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And Elias didn't look good coming out of that. Because it was like, well, you worked over him for 90% of the match and yet you still lost like a doofus.
One kick to the head.
But I think because this was a good back and forth match, I think it made Roddy look really, really great. I was a big, big fan of this match. And then afterwards, you had Kyle O'Reilly come down. But the first thing he does is he hits the ring and gets black masked right in the face and crumples out of the ring. He's the best. Oh. He's wonderful.
I would rather watch matches in which Kyle O'Reilly just sold injuries that he had. Like, he just sold moves. I don't even want to see him do moves. I just want to see him get hit in the head.
Oh, God, he was
and
great.
Just do his little.
Yeah. And then Fish and Cole also run down. Ricochet comes out to make the save. So even though they were at a 4-on-2 advantage, they still ran scarpered because Ricochet and Black sent them packing. So it kind of plays more into this Undisputed Era. Even when they're doing a rundown, they can't even like stay on top. Yeah.
Just like you should have all three of you run out together.
Yeah.
There was a point where you should have held Kyle back for 1 second.
He's so
grabbed
quick,
him
though.
By the tights. Gotcha. Come back, you little scamp.
We got a video from last week with Baszler and co. bullying the locker room.
Oh, yeah.
They're also talking about some of the new recruits from NXT, including Chelsea Green.
I love these videos where they just, out of context, because they're just, they don't do these videos ever. So it's not like we're just filming this normal video we film with the training staff at the PC, and then suddenly you're like, oh, there's a fight going on in the locker room. Yeah. Like, it would make more sense if it was someone filming like a backstage vlog, like someone who actually does do promos.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just your training staff.
Training staff just saying like, we've got a great crop of guys coming in now. We then got a Bianca Belair video package talking about the Phoenix match and how she would be the NXT Women's Champion if it wasn't for that idiot ref falling down. I would be the winner, which is true. She did get a visual pin.
It's true.
And then she turns her attention and just like, and then like Io Shirai and Kairi Sane just stepping in here and stealing her spotlight away from her. I thought this was a great, great promo from Belair. Like her character. I much prefer this more heelish aspect of it than the babyface one she was in the lead up to the match with Baszler, where she is like, no, I am the EST. Because the EST is a heel gimmick. I am better than you. And I think she works that character so, so well. And she's still saying that she's undefeated, even though, you know, she is.
She got the visual pin.
Yeah, exactly. So I really like
take that to her grave, like you about the announce tables.
I lost and it's fine. I've got to move past that, I guess. even though they nearly ended a tables match with it and announced a table spot on Raw, just saying.
Did it end the actual match, though?
Well, no, they didn't use it in the end. But, I mean,
probably because it didn't count.
I mean, regardless, I recorded the video anyway. So what am I going to do? Unrecord the video and unpost it? No, I lost.
Fine.
We recap the four of them going into this Elseworlds, like going through this portal and appearing on the other
mystical
side.
The mystical dream that happened this week. The spirit walk that they all took.
Every day I've woken up going like, I had this really weird dream that they were all on Raw and SmackDown. It was bizarre. It was really out of continuity. Gargano and Ciampa were friends.
Yeah.
Oh, which makes zero sense. And that's when we got the announcement that the Dusty Classic is returning in a couple of weeks, and the winners are going to face the War Raiders at TakeOver. So we've got 8 teams going in, and the 4 that have been announced are the Undisputed Era of O'Reilly and Fish. Street Profits. It's because I've done FS, and I was like, who the hell are FS?
Forgotten Sons.
Forgotten Sons. Ironically, I forgot them again. Yeah, so the Forgotten Sons of Blake and the other one.
Cutler.
That's it, thank you. Street Profits and the European Union of Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel. Cool, good 4 teams. And I've written here, poor Larkin and Birch.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
But I'd imagine they'll be among the other 4 that are yet to be announced. So those are going to be announced next week. So that's next week we'll know our full 8, which is very, very exciting. Then, what was probably the worst part of this show? I feel bad. I feel bad that we keep picking. I feel like we are picking on Mia Yim, but we're not. It's just she keeps being involved in bad matches. And I don't think it's ever her fault.
No.
Because she's really good.
Yeah. She's got nothing to do at the moment is the problem. And I think that's the major issue is that sometimes when NXT doesn't have anything to do, they just try established person or like whoever sort of is middling established in NXT, Mia Yim, versus completely unestablished person. So then you end up with matches that don't really mean, they don't mean anything to the crowd.
Yeah.
And they don't mean anything, you know, they don't have the opportunity to really go beyond what they are, which is someone who's quite green or fairly new to WWE against someone who's like also quite new to WWE, yeah, yeah. Actually.
Oh, the TV's going to turn off in a minute. But
where is that. The remote? This
Remote's here.
Is it a clapper?
What if I press this?
Press OK.
That's what I've just tried. OK, come on. Can you cover
for the podcast? Yeah, for the podcast listeners, we're trying to fix a television now that's about to turn off. We're not doing very well.
No.
Maybe just turn it off and then on again. Have you tried turning it on and off again?
I'll do that now.
But anyway, so I think the problem with Mia Yim is that so far she's not really had anything to do. In the same way that Keith Lee didn't for a very long time,
mm-hmm.
and still doesn't still particularly. Doesn't, so yeah. Like, it just feels like when she comes out, you're just going to see a match that doesn't mean much. It doesn't, you know. And I think the key is, the silly thing is that actually NXT is very good at story, and mm-hmm. it is well known for being good at story. And that is also what WWE does better than most other wrestling promotions. Pretty much all of them, in fact. So to go to WWE's developmental territory and to not develop the story with someone feels like a waste.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just like Mia Yim comes out and says, I'm the head baddie in charge. I'm this, I'm that, I'm whatever. It's placeholder. It all feels like she's not going for a title. She's not got a feud going on with someone, which she could have just had a feud. In this entire time that she's been there, she's had, what, like six matches maybe on NXT TV?
It's the same thing we've been saying about, like, as you say, Keith Lee. Like, Keith Lee's he'll have been in NXT for nearly a year. Like, I think it's like June or July, he'll have been in for a year. And he's done nout since he came up.
I don't think it doesn't take much to just have a minor feud running. It doesn't even have to be like
building to a takeover match.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be building to a takeover match. It doesn't have to be building even to like a blow-off television match. It just has to be they had a match, there was a bad fallout, and they're in each other's faces a few times.
Yeah.
They get involved in each other's matches. Things, you know, progress. It feels like someone's actually moving forward, whereas Mia Yim is just picking up wins that mean nout.
Well, yeah, and this was certainly the case here, because she faced against Xia Li, who you may remember from the Royal Rumble. She does have a fun choreographed entrance.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give it. That's a fun little entrance. Mm. It's really entertaining to watch. I can't say the rest of the match was, though. My first note is, well, this isn't very good.
I think the problem is my favourite bit of this match was the bit in which Xia Li was doing kicks that were all going wide.
Yeah.
But they were all like beautiful, like martial arts kicks. And Yim was backing off into the corner.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then she just went, hey, 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 hey. Cool it, yeah. sister.
It was my favourite spot of the match. And I thought the test of strength stuff was a little bit fun as well. The best thing about this match was Mia Yim's selling. I think she's really, really good at selling, but the crowd were completely dead for this.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely dead. And then eventually Mia Yim hits the protect yo neck.
It's the eat defeat with knees.
Yeah, yeah. It's a modified eat defeat.
Yes,
but with a Wu-Tang reference.
Is it a new one? Is this her new
finisher? I guess it is. Well, it's got a new name now. Which is protect your neck. And then afterwards,
it looks mildly better.
Yeah, and I'd much prefer it to just doing the eat defeat. And then Baszler and the other horsemen run down to attack them. A load of trainees run down to make the save, but the horsemen just kill everyone. And then with Baszler laying out Mia Yim. And
brutal running knee.
Oh, man. Well, Baszler's great.
Yeah,
Baszler's great. so good. And Baszler's there almost like shouting, like, I demand respect. And I thought, well, Hideo Itami's gone now, so I guess they may as well give that gimmick to someone else.
Yeah, you can have the one-word gimmick if you like.
Yeah. I thought that the actual like end segment was quite good with the Horsewomen and Baszler, and they announced that it's going to be Mia Yim versus Baszler next week, which is a match I'm hoping this is going to be like the first good Mia Yim match in NXT.
Yes,
because that's what I think Mia Yim has been missing. I think her presentation's very good. I think her entrance is good. I think her style, I think her look is very good.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just been in not always bad matches, but sometimes boring matches.
I think they're disjointed, aren't
they? Disjointed and things like that, yeah. So I'm hoping that next week is going to be like the first good Mia Yim match in NXT.
I would love to see just a 5-minute Mia Yim match that is fast-paced. Like, really, like, against someone a bit more established, they just come out and they just, like, Candice LeRae versus Mia Yim would be a good match. They just came out and did all of their good moves at each other for 5 minutes,
yeah,
finish the match. Like, no ups and downs, no quiet sections, no silly little spots. Just beat the hell out of each other. I'd love to see that.
Well, let's hope we get that next week when she faces Baszler. And then the last thing we're going to get to talk about, because this was fun, Jeremy Borash made his NXT debut.
What?
All of a sudden, I was like, oh my God, it's Jeremy Borash. Why is Borash there?
Ill-framed Jeremy Borash.
Poor old Jeremy Borash. He didn't look great. But hey, nice to have him on the TV because I really like Jeremy Borash. Mm. Jeremy Borash in this segment as well reminded me, and I'd imagine he's taking a lot of inspiration from this as well, like Jim Ross.
Right.
And I'm not saying that Jeremy Borash is as good as Jim Ross, but when Jim Ross used to do these sit-down interviews, he felt like a genuine sort of like a journalist, a commentator, an announcer interviewing a wrestler very seriously. Mm. As like, I really want to interview this person. I really want to get deep into like inside your mind or like what you're thinking about with these certain things. And I want to hear more about you, as opposed to my guest at this time, North American, and just doing generic backstage interviews.
Well, I think very scripted as well.
Yes. Yeah. So I thought this actually was a really cool presentation. Apparently it's from a much longer YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
But he was interviewing Matt Riddle.
Yes.
And I thought Riddle was really great into this. They were talking about his debut in NXT and things like that. And like Jeremy Borash was saying, like, you know, you come in and you kind of look unconventional because you're wearing a suit, but you're also wearing a baseball cap.
You got flip-flops.
You got flip-flops and things like that. So I thought...
Thongs for the Australians.
Borash just came across really well in his interviewing style because he's very good at that. And Riddle said that someone told him that the worst thing that he could have possibly done was be told to dial it up.
Yeah.
So he'd rather be told to dial it down, which is great.
Yeah.
I think it works brilliantly for the Riddle character.
It's interesting because I really like all the sort of presentation stuff they've done with Riddle, like that's been on the YouTube side of things. Like his whole Arrival documentary series is really interesting.
Where he was reading the WrestleTalk magazine.
Yeah, but really, really worth watching. It's just one of those like fascinating looks at someone's that is sort of manages to walk the line perfectly between being both sort of kayfabe and real world.
Yeah, yeah.
It's smart. It's smart, smart stuff. And it smart, works perfect for someone like Riddle, who was a fighter and was someone who was famous before, you know, or well-known-ish before going into WWE. So it just works really, really well.
This was cool. And he was talking about how he was happy to get rid of Ono after TakeOver and how he beat Gulak next week. And then he's just like, I want to win the North American Championship. I want to win the NXT Championship. Any championship I can get my hand on, that's the belt I want to win.
Mm-hmm.
Which feels to me like that's him setting him up for Velveteen Dream, possibly for TakeOver New York in his sort of like his first big championship match. Which excites me.
It's exciting.
Riddle versus Dream.
I don't
like
necessarily know if Dream's walking out with that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. We'll find out what happens next week. But I thought this was a very, very good episode of NXT. I loved the Black Strong match to kick things off, and I loved the Gargano Dream match to end it off. It's a 3-match card. Match in the middle wasn't particularly great, but it's fine.
Strong Black's a coffee, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's not how I take my coffee, but yes, it is. So I love the opening two matches, and they went much longer than the middle match. So thumbs up all round NXT for me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think there's at least, even though that middle match wasn't fantastic, there's some interesting stuff coming out of it, and hopefully a chance next week to finally do something with Mia Yim.
Yeah.
Which will be great.
Which will be great.
It would be so nice to see, like, you know, in the Mae Young Classic, she was fantastic. So it would be nice to see that Mia Yim arrive finally in NXT.
Exactly. She was great in Impact as well. Mm. So fans of Mia Yim, I just feel like we've been burying her on this show because she's yet to have a good match, and I don't think that's her fault.
No.
Just putting that out there. We had a great D&D session.
Right?
So we
killed the boss.
So I, because I missed a week, where the week where my wife locked herself out of the house, and I had to go home and help her back in.
Yep.
Which I was fuming about. So the week
after... You don't understand.
Exactly. It's
We've
not
got
how
to
the
take f- down the demon.
And I kept saying, just like, but now in storyline, I'm not there. So it breaks the flow. So
Immersion. The immersion.
Exactly, yeah. So the week after that, I felt like I was playing a bit of catch up.
Right.
On the story and what had happened and why we were sort of doing certain things. So there was one point where I asked a question And you just looked at me and said, like, your character wouldn't know that. And I was like, cool. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I thought that I did.
Yeah.
That's because I'd missed a session. But regardless. So this week was like the first week where I've been on a 2-week run. So I felt like I was really back into the story. We'd made a plan right at the end of our last session. And I just thought to myself, this plan cannot fail.
You don't know us.
Well, which is remarkable because I do know us. Yep. I should have seen it coming that it was going to fail.
But it didn't actually.
But it didn't. No, it didn't. But what...
It just... I think, well, the point was... So the plan was... we were in this ghost town, which was a town that we'd visited 20 years previously because we've jumped in time. My character's been around the entire time. Their characters went somewhere else for like what felt like a couple of weeks, turned up 20 years later. This ghost town, in the market square of the ghost town, there is a huge black vortex spiraling above a pile of corpses. This sort of semi-transparent figure seemingly standing in the middle, orchestrating the entire thing. Around the market square, about 40 feet away, there is a ring of spirits that are all stood completely stock still around the edge of the market town. We've encountered the spirits before. If you touch them, they hurt you.
They get very aggressive.
They get very aggressive. So we were like, okay, how do we get to the middle of this square and take on this thing? And then we sort of went on a recce up of this building and we were like, okay, well, it looks like they're not going into the center of the market square. It looks like almost as if they can't. And we were told by someone else who'd been in the town who became part undead, a revenant. He said that he couldn't approach because every time he did, he felt like all of the remaining life force in him and all of his powers were being sucked out. So he couldn't go in there. So we sort of guessed from that, that they couldn't approach. Our idea was that we would send half the party through the sewers to pop out into the center of town because we knew there was a well there. So they would pop out through the well in the center of town, while the other ones of us who were ranged attackers would stay on a rooftop with Overwatch.
Mm.
What happened in the sewers, Ander?
So the idea was I would be the part of the recce team. And we would go under the sewers, we would pop out. The idea being that if we step out of the well and the spirit does not come forward and attack us, then we know it's safe. Brilliant, I'll jump back down the well, we'll all come through the sewers, and we'll all pop out together and we'll all take care of this big baddie. That seems like such a brilliant plan. So me and our half-orc went down there. The reason why I was going to go be the one to the recce, because I'm a monk, I can just jump back down the well. I don't have to climb down the ladder. I can just jump down as quickly as possible and I won't take any damage.
You've got slowfall.
Because I've got slowfall. So we're like, brilliant. So me and our half-orc went through the sewers and it was very disgusting and very smelly down there.
There was a poo monster.
Well, yes.
Sort of.
So I thought...
Cthulhu, as we call it, because it had tentacles. Yeah.
So I thought that the sewers would just have zombies in them. Because we've fought zombies outside the walls and sort of like in the city a little bit.
Sure.
So I figured, that's fine. We'll just encounter some zombies along the way. We'll dispatch of them very quickly because they're low HP and we're quite good. So we'll just kill them quite easily, pick up small XP, this and the other. We're fine.
Yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. There'll be no issue whatsoever.
Yada, 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 mission continues.
Exactly, yeah, pretty much. Then we were walking along and we found that there was an area where a walkway had broken and there was just sort of like a river of...
excrement.
Poo. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. And so I cast Water Walk on the pair of us, which allows us to walk over water and it'd be fine. Because it was like a 20-foot gap.
Sure.
And I was like, well, fine, we can just step onto it and we'll just go across and we'll get up on the other side. And... we got our DM just said that it's not going to, you can't walk across it like it's solid ground because poo is not really liquid, which is fair enough. So he said it was more like spongy.
All right.
Which yeah. I was like, okay, well, that's cool. So you're like, our feet, we didn't sink into it like we would have done had I not cast Water Walk. So I just sort of like skipped across it very quickly. The half orc, however, Zadark, bless him, he stood on something that hurt him. And he took a bit of damage and he lost some of his movement. And then a poo monster arose. What our DM described as, like, it's nothing but teeth.
It's just a mouth, big
mouth with teeth like swords, is how he described it. He's like, basically, he said, picture the Sarlacc.
It was the poo of Sarlacc. Yeah,
it was the poo of Sarlacc. A poo version of the Sarlacc from Return of the Jedi. And so we had to roll initiative to fight this thing. And I was going first. So I was like, oh, I'm going to hold my action I'm gonna do Water Whip if he tries to attack Zadark, but I'm just gonna tell Zadark, run.
Yeah.
Because I'm already up the other side.
Like a Jurassic Park.
just run. And I was just shouting at him,
Alan, run.
Just get out of there as quickly as we possibly can. Because in my head as well, because thinking it's like the Sarlacc, once we're out of the poo, it's fine.
Yeah.
He's not going to be able to get up.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite the case.
Eventually, tethered poo monster.
We got out of the poo, and I managed to help Zadark get out of the poo. But this thing was following us. So I was like, let's just run. When this thing did attack us, all it did damage. And we would have lasted 2, maybe max 3 hits from it before we were dead.
And you would have at least got a bad case of pink eye.
Right? And that's the last thing I need.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got youthful minus good looks on my side.
Minus accuracy.
Minus charisma.
Yeah.
And my charisma's already bad. So I was like, we just need to run and run and run. So we pelted it down this sort of like walkway stuff. While this thing was screaming at us, it was slashing at its tentacles and we were trying to dodge out the way of it. And eventually we found like this tiny sort of like walkway at the side, and he said it's about a 5 foot gap, and I was like, based on what I know of this poo monster and what I've seen, would it be able to fit down? And he said no. I was like, cool, let's go this way. Yeah. So we darted down there, and yeah, sure as s, it couldn't get down there.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty terrifying. I was genuinely quite scared, because I thought, if we die, you guys don't know we're dead. Unless I manage to like tell you on a sending stone that we're in trouble, you won't know we're dead.
And we might not come and help, to be
fair.
That's
the other side of this.
When you describe what the problem is,
might
be like, no.
So.
Made it through that.
And you might think, oh, that's where the plan went wrong. Oh, no.
No.
So
it went wrong at every turn.
So we then encountered a ghost child, which was pretty scary. And then we climbed up into it, and I tied some rope around myself.
But before you did that, we tried to reposition.
Yeah, this is where it started to go slightly wrong.
It started to go pear-shaped at so many levels. So you were busy getting ready to go up. So the idea was that Luke's character, Ander, would wear a rope. So he could be, if something happened that meant he couldn't jump back down, he could just be dragged back down into the sewer and then we could run away.
By our strongest.
By Zadar, the strongest guy. Interestingly, our paladin in this entire process had gone shopping. He'd gone to a shop where he'd left some armor 20 years ago in an attempt to find it. So he was out of action.
Yeah.
However, he then decided after he'd found the armor to stand in the window of the shop and try and get my attention while I was on the roof. Just as our Dragonborn sorcerer, Petty Cash, decided that he was going to try and reposition by jumping across the rooftops to get closer to the marketplace, because we were just on the roof that we had all climbed up. That was far enough away to hopefully not attract attention, but also close enough that I could hit things with my bow, which is all I really cared about.
Exactly.
However, so Torin starts waving a torch in a window. I clock onto that. Just as I do, Petty Cash decides he's going to do a running jump across the building and rolls a critical fail. And I was just like, did I see him go? Like, how quickly do you think I could tie a bit of rope to an arrow and fire it underneath him so he's something to grab onto?
Yeah.
Did. He managed to bounce off it, land on the floor, attracting the attention to a bunch of spirits who all started to rush him. I then quickly tried to drop the rope again. He turned invisible, not realizing that ghosts don't use sight to see you. They're just sensing life force. So he was still there as far as they were concerned. Climbed up, back on the roof, spend 10 seconds more looking, find a plank to just put across the gap, walk across the gap.
Yeah.
Your move.
Well, the other part of that is that because Torin, our paladin, who'd gone shopping, didn't know what our plan was, you communicated to him of what the plan was.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Which was, eyes on the market square. We're going to see what happens in the market square. But as the adventurous chap that he is, his reading of that is, we're all going to the market square.
Go
to the market square.
Go now.
So I there jump out of the well, trying to do this very cool recce, making sure that everything is fine. And then I look to my left and I see our paladin, clad in massive armor, charging through the spirits to run into the market square, thinking like, oh, this plan has gone horribly wrong.
No.
And yeah, it did instigate the final boss fight before we were really ready for the final boss
fight. We were just
fight.
Checking that the ghost didn't go in the market square, which, thank God, they didn't.
If that... It would have gone, been horrible if they could have gone into the market square. It would have been awful. Me and Zadok are at half health because of the Pooh Monster.
You would have been dead. He would have been dead.
Oh, man.
We would have been fine.
Because you're up on roofs. You're fine,
mate. Yeah, just sat on the roof just going, all right, we're just chilling.
But thankfully, the fight went fine because the spirits couldn't get into there. And this guy did kind of like raise the dead ever so slightly. But I managed to water whip him and do a lot of damage. And I also managed to stun him for a turn as well with a stunning strike.
Mm-hmm.
But really, crucially, the reason we won is because our sorcerer cast like this amazing lightning bolts thing that did untold amount of damage on him.
He's got a new spell. And he was sitting on it as well because he was like... He's quite a nervy player. He's like, I don't want to be left without stuff. And I was like, no, spend everything.
Yeah.
But it was only after I went, have you got anything better than just shocking grasp and stuff like that? Like, just let's do something bigger. And he's like, oh, I've got this lightning bolt spell. I was like, look how much damage that does. Why would you not fire that at this thing? And he fired it across three of them and just fried two zombies and did a huge chunk of health off this thing.
Oh, man, it was great.
Yeah, that was good. And then he did it again.
Yeah, and then he got
then
the
he spent
again.
His sorcery points and did it again.
Oh, it
was brilliant.
Wonderful. Yeah. So, we managed to defeat the baddie. He flew off and we lifted a curse from this town. So, all's well that ends well. We're now on. So, we need to make a decision. Our DM messaged us yesterday, last night, about what we're going to do next. Although, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to have a session next week because...
People are busy.
So we need to decide where we're going to go next. But one of the places we're going to go actually passes my hometown.
Past my hometown too.
Oh, cool.
And we're not going there.
No. I don't know if we're
going to go reasons.
I don't know if we're going to go to my hometown.
There are reasons
either.
Why we're not going there.
Yeah.
But it's also Torin's home to a degree as well. So
yeah, I suppose it would be.
Our paladin wants to go there. My character does not want to go there.
Well... More thrilling adventures from the world of Dungeons & Dragons if you do enjoy this part of the podcast. I imagine
end of the podcast.
When I said, oh, we had a fun D&D session, I can imagine a lot of people like, I'm turning this off. Like, okay, cool. So the episode is over then. I don't need to listen to these two dorks just talk about this for 10 minutes.
Hey.
Anyway, that is all we've got time for on this episode of the Wrestle Ramble podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Ollie and I will be back on Saturday for the magazine portion of the show talking about, you guessed it, those NXT call-ups and the crazy story that's essentially surrounded it as to why these call-ups have happened. So we got a lot to dive into, as well as your mailbag questions for Bad Chambers and crap gimmick wrestling. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Have a good weekend. I love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.